The name of this session is Image, Symbol, and Metaphor as Building Blocks for Community. Now that we're such a nice cozy group, obviously this will be very informal, so just chime in at any time. This array of color here is symbol and image, and I'll be unpacking where I'm coming from with that throughout the session. So I'd like to just start out by drawing attention to the primary symbol and image in my whole life, which is right here on this little placemat. And that is that, those of you that have been to the other sessions before, I've talked about this being a symbol of wholeness, of completeness, and I don't know if any of you have read this wonderful little book by Sally McPhee called Speaking in Parables. I think it's still in the bookstore, at least it used to be. She's also written some other ones like Metaphorical Theology that is very, very good. And I was just brushing up on one of the chapters this morning, and it was talking about how metaphorical thinking is that sometimes we'll see something and we see something we've never seen in it before, which is one reason the teachings of Jesus are the Bible is exciting, because we can always learn a deeper level of meaning. For those of you that haven't been here before, very briefly, I saw 2 years ago when I was putting away my Advent and Christmas decorations something I had never seen before in this Advent wreath, and decided to keep it out all year long, and that is simply that I grew up in a family of five, was the oldest of three children, and now I have a family of five. My husband and I have three children, and I thought, this is a symbol of my family story. And I teach spirituality classes too at Augsburg College, and talk about how we can create worship centers all over our home that are part of our walls, but they're really telling our story in symbol and metaphor. And so I do a lot of work with candles, and now that Nancy Searles has been talking about color, yellow being the Christ color, white, all of creation, and red, you know, etc. So when I talk to my children, when we talk to our children about my family, we use this a lot, and I do different things with candles, and as you know, a centerpiece centers the family and provides a lot of topics for conversation. The other thing I'd like to draw your attention to, though, is this, and this is really the driving metaphor of my life. And this is one of my dad's worn-out Bibles. And I did not grow up with a hypocritical father. This was... My sister has one, and my mother has one, and they all look like this, and it's a King James Version. My father was a person who had had a radical conversion when he was 19, and loved God with more passion than anybody I've ever met in my life, and I saw him meditate literally day and night. And so in my home, this is sitting inadvertently on the table in my front foyer. So every time I pass through it, it's a visible reminder, you know, that Deuteronomy passage, a visible reminder of the driving force that comes out of my family of origin. And briefly, I'm bringing it up only today to say that this metaphor for me is that my dad taught me where to go for strength. And it also is very much connected to the kind of work I'm doing, which is long-term bereavement follow-up and walking with people on their journey, putting their lives back together after they've been bereaved, which also is related to this circle, because for those of you that haven't been here before, I talk about a broken circle being that two, my father and my brother died of cancer when I was very young and very close together. So I was just like in 6 years, I was just walking in cancer hospitals. And so when I talk about healing, to me, these are not circle pieces that have gone away, but they have become mended and are part of my story. So that's just a brief introduction to metaphor. I'd like to just highlight, first of all, the theme of the thesis of really why I'm talking about image, symbol, and metaphor as building blocks of community is because I believe they're methods of transformation. When you really analyze the teachings of Jesus, Jesus taught in parable, symbol, metaphor, and they're metaphors sometimes that are not always easy to understand. It's not like 1 + 1 = 2. We have to live with them, and they become new for us as we walk along our journey. Just some brief dictionary definitions. Image is a representation of a person or an object, i.e. we are images of God. And I've just loved Nancy Searle's sessions on talking about the white light of creation. We are all the rainbow. All of the colors are in us. All of the colors are in all of creation. That's the, and I, after her first session, I walked up to her and I said, would you take a look at this brochure I designed? Because this, you can all just take one if you want. These are the brochures I designed for the work I do. And I was sitting this past January trying to come up with a logo or something that I could use for my design. And all of a sudden, it was like the rainbow. It was just like I was inspired. And it was really fun to talk to Nancy and have her confirm that, well, that's holistic, all of creation, which is what we're trying to do and when we walk with each other in on a healing journey. Okay, metaphor, as we all know, is simply a figure of speech in which a term is applied to something to which it is not literally, okay? In other words, we say a mighty fortress is our God. We have the Bible is packed full of wonderful metaphors for God. So while we're doing this session today, I'd like to have you think about this, and please chime in at any time you'd like. What symbols have shaped your reality? Words are symbols, and in the work I do, what I believe happens, and it happens over and over again, is that when, okay, we're talking about being bereaved through death, for instance, your world, your circle is broken into. And then you're thrust, like it or not, back into your family system, your family of origins. If a father dies, if a mother dies, even if they're 89 and you've expected their death, it's your mother. It's the life force that brought you into the world. And so it brings up a host of images. I just had a conversation with three different people today talking about being raised in very abusive family systems. And what I'm saying here is they were raised, we were all raised, with a host of symbols, words, that shaped our reality, and that we have stuff somewhere inside of us and that we carry with us. And as we go along life's journey, those symbols are printed in our brains. Also, to think about how you image yourself as God's creation. One of the past sessions, I brought a wrapping paper that I really believe if we'd all be in balance, at all times we would know and act out the fact that we are all like big gift packages, which is a symbol. It's a rainbow. And then what are your metaphors for God, your reality, and what are your metaphors for your own oppression, your own pain, and your own healing? Anybody want to respond to anything I've said so far? Or okay. For instance, two paradoxical kind of images. I believe that a listening heart comes out of having maybe a broken heart or heart that's been broken into. I think the people that are most compassionate are the people that have been wounded and have been following that journey. Henry Nouwen's book, With Open Hands, so I'm sure many of you have read this, is, I think, a metaphor, the opposite of which would be a clenched fist, which this is a metaphor for the way, an image of the way we go to God in prayer. Gerhard Frost's book, The Color of the Night, which is one of the books I had recommended for this series. You all know this book? Oh, it's just a wonderful, wonderful book. If you like to give gifts, it's Meditations on the Book of Job. Gerhard Frost was a professor at Luther Northwestern Seminary. He died, I think, within the last 2 years, and he was a very poetic preacher, teacher, person. And this is just full of wonderful images, and I use a lot of these for when I send cards to people, handmade cards. But just look at the title of the book, The Color of the Night. That's very evocative. It's, first of all, saying that to grieve, to be in bereavement or whatever, part of our journey is night, but what color is the night? And at what point does it change color? It's just a wonderful, anything by Gerhard Frost is highly poetic.
What's the last name again?
Frost. Another metaphor, Martin Marty has this wonderful book called The Cry of Absence, and I think we know how to be present with people when we have known absence, when we have known our own loneliness or walked that journey. Another reason I happen to like circles as images are because I've been very influenced by feminist theology and have been part of a group of women that started 5 years ago, I've referred to this in past sessions too, that radicalized my idea of what community can be. And so I think in circles, and that means I'm always in conflict because the world is hierarchically ordered and we have hierarchical systems every time we turn around. But those are just just some introductions to the idea of symbol and metaphor. Okay, I'd like to have you also think of yourself as an artist and to think about what images have come out of your reality. I'm going to take the time to read this article. Do any of you get Daughters of Sarah or read Daughters of Sarah? It's also up in the library. It's a Christian feminist magazine. And the latest article was this little article called Courage in the Dark Room. And it's not very long, so just bear with me as I read it, because this is highly metaphorical. And then we maybe, I hope you can respond and you can start a little discussion after this. It's a photographer writing it. When I am in the dark room, I am responding to myself. Beyond the chemical process, there exists a kind of alchemical revelation of my creative vision. It becomes a retreat from the world of light and its many contrasts to a world without light, where there is solitude and a singularity of purpose, to connect my parts. It is only lately that I have thought of myself as an artist. Only since I have been able to integrate the images I produce in my dark room with a light that emerges from my own inner darkness. This process of integration does not happen easily, nor does it occur in the absence of solitude. In our society, we are constantly being driven from this intimacy with ourselves. We are defined by what we do to pay the bills, not by the work which gives affirmation to ourselves. I see thousands of us out there trying to find time and space to create in our own image, to tell our stories in our own styles. But we are so often isolated in our artistry, working other jobs to pay the rent, having children to feed or parents to nurse or hay to be mowed or lovers to be loved. We have reason upon reason why we cannot get into our passion, our own work. I once let my work go for several months and lost the balance in my life. I had begun a new relationship and counted on someone else to do what only I could do for myself, maintain my connectedness with my spirit. When the relationship changed, I was devastated. I had no strong center to return to, no faith in myself that I would live through and beyond the pain. I knew I should return to my art. I knew I needed to go into the dark again, but it was no longer familiar. I needed to regain the part of me I had lost. But I was filled with fear. I doubted my vision and my ability to create images that mattered. Then one day I summoned the courage to return to the darkroom. I worked on negatives I hadn't printed before. I made prints to frame and give away. I talked to myself about how skilled I was, about how beautiful my photographs were, and how they would move people. I believed myself, though, that first critical passageway. I stayed there for hours, getting reacquainted with the darkness and its healing qualities. From the pain and glory of that experience, I learned the importance of the unity between my work and my life. I must nurture my self-spiritual relationship as the primary relationship in my life, the one from which all other intimacies can grow. To neglect it is to betray the very part of myself that is the source of my vision. We must not turn our back on our art, our beauty, that which gives meaning to our lives. We need to continue to create, and there needs to be encouragement and support and sharing among the creators. We are not choosing what is simple, but rather what is authentic, and the price is dear. It is good to share with others the ways we pay that price. I want to know what it feels like to you to create. I want to see what you've wrought. I want to know what it's like in your darkness and how the light feels when it breaks through. I want to speak to the commonness we experience with each other. And I believe in the necessity of this exchange if we are truly to create a culture that speaks to the whole of our lives. Now, I need some reaction as to how that particular metaphorical image of creating images speaks to your reality, and then we'll go on. Anybody want to react, respond to that?
Reflecting that you sometimes hear people say that we've been so long living with a very scientific type of language that's very much, A plus B equals C. Everything has to be weighed and measured, and there's no reality apart from what can be weighed and measured. that, you know, some people would have argued that, that metaphor and image and symbol and so on are beyond us, or we, you know, they, people don't apprehend them anymore. But I'm not so sure about that. I think we have been in a time that is very flat in terms of language. But I would guess we're coming into a time that's more rich with symbol and metaphor and image and so on. One of my definitions of a fundamentalist would be somebody who cannot handle metaphor.
Yeah, and because metaphor is ambiguous.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
And open-ended.
Multifaceted. Yeah,
yes.
Lots of voices
yeah,
there.
Right. Thank you. You're a painter. Did you have your paintings you want with us? You want speaking of image.
Up in my chalet.
And last night's wonderful Vespers was another manifestation of that.
Yeah, that was metaphor, wasn't it?
Anybody else want to just respond to that image of courage in the dark room? I think for me, the reason I chose to read it is because courage in the dark room, to me, means what Matthew Fox, if you've read Original Blessing, is to be able to enter into your own darkness and then see what light comes out of that at whatever point, wherever your darkness is. And it's something that I do not think we have places to talk about much in our culture, let alone, I mean, busyness would be the one obvious reason we don't. And I've also had a lot of interesting side conversations with people, villagers here, staff people, guests and faculty people, that we come to Holden for all kinds of different reasons and different levels of seeking that light in the darkness. And sometimes it's met and sometimes it isn't. Okay, if no one wants to comment anymore at this point, I'd like to go on to talk about a very, very practical way I deal with symbol and metaphor in my work. Yesterday we were just at the point where I was just going to explain this and I didn't have time to. So I'm going to tell a story that has to do with all this over here by Paul. I'm just going to move this over here. Going back to this metaphor in my life, when we had gone through those two cancer deaths, it was Vietnam, and I was working in a rest home. That was my life. That was it. And I was in my early 20s, and everybody else that I knew was going to college, going to Holden Village, going to Europe, traveling around, and I was just engulfed in death and meaninglessness. And it was the first time in my life I had to face what all this Bible stuff was about, what my dad's driving faith was all about, and had to start making it my own. And out of my own experience, the way I would tell that story is that I'll never forget the night of my father's funeral, and we were opening the cards that came. And I had been sort of the caretaker of my family's emotional system because I was the oldest child, and that was just the role I was in. And I will never forget sitting around in a circle with about three times as many people as this, and all the relatives were opening the cards. And all of a sudden, this dread seized me, and I thought, okay, now pretty soon, the first person's going to get up, and they're going to leave, and they're going to go home. And everybody's going to get up, and they're going to leave and go home. And my mom's going to be here all by herself. And it was November, and she was going to have to live in that house all by herself that 5 years before that were full of five people and a very full, busy family life. So I started sending her greeting cards. And when I talk about image, symbol, and metaphor, I think that as we go along in life, that have any of you read Elizabeth O'Connor on finding your bliss out of your pain? Anybody read Elizabeth O'Connor? It's a wonderful. Most of her books are here in the Holden Bookstore. But she has a wonderful article in the November issue of The Other Side magazine that is just so packed full of richness. And one of her themes is that when we follow our pain, it will lead us to our bliss, which I find to be a radical idea. I don't hear that very many places. I don't hear it from the pulpit very often, or I don't read it very many places, unless it's in a Christian subculture. Elizabeth O'Connor, by the way, for those of you that don't know, is very instrumental in the Church of Our Savior in Washington, D.C., which is a real intentional small group community. So, what I started to do was send my mother postcards. And the reason I brought all this today is because this, believe it or not, is what gives me more joy than almost anything else I do, which is a card ministry. And I have a significant sticker budget. I do. The last time I went and bought stickers, I spent $15 for stickers. And one of my addictions is pens, calligraphy pens. And then I buy postcards, and I keep them in an envelope. And I carry these in my purse all the time. And then I know a whole bunch of people's addresses by heart now, but I have lists of people. And this has been a ministry I've had for 20 years that came out of my own brokenness and my own pain. And I mentioned in a session last week that someday I think I'd like to write a book entitled What Happens After They Pick Up the Casserole Dishes. Because if you've had a death in your family, you're inundated with food and cards and people, and then it gets very, very quiet, and very, very few people know how to hang in there with you over the long haul. So I simply started this ministry, and I just wrote a little sample card to my mom. This is my mother's address. And I'll usually write a little more than this, but I just pick out a sticker and write her a little message. And usually I use scripture or some quote or something from poetry or something that's kind of upbeat. And the reason I believe in this in terms of a building block of community, a tool for transformation, is I really think this is one way to share the gospel. Because we as believers have a lot of good news to share. And I think the more colorfully we can do that, and with texture and with imagination, there's no end to what we can do. So, what I've done over the years, and I would think I would have a much more systematized, if not computerized, way, but I'm sort of afraid of computers, so I'll probably never do this. But what I simply do is keep notebooks like this, and I have all these little slips of paper with people's addresses, or I write them down. And one of the ways I pray, which I realize is not the way my dad did, but this is something I've integrated from his energy, I think, is to make myself a cup of coffee and put on some wonderful music and light a candle and sit down with my stickers and markers and postcards and write people letters. And I probably still send about 20 a week. And that is not duty. That is pure joy. And over again, people will say, oh, I can't thank you enough for your card. It just came on the right day. I needed that message that day, which I also believe is a ministry of the Spirit, because when I sit down and look at all these names, I don't know why I send people cards on the day I do, but I believe that's not my work. I think I'm just, as you're saying, a vessel, an earthen vessel that's open to that. Now, I find it real interesting, and I'm not going to talk a lot about this because I don't know enough about it, but when Nancy Searles talks about color, you know, if some of you have gone to her sessions, and so I buy stickers of every possible, you know, do birthday things, and I do this in bereavement work, especially, and with children, and I teach in the prison system, and now I'm doing weekend spirituality workshops there, and I have to tell you about that setting dramatizes, I think, life in the ways we live it out. But you walk into this prison in our hometown, it's a minimum security facility, and it smells terrible. There's awful, it's just the most dingy, awful place I've ever been into. And when I teach relationship courses there in communication, I do this with grown men. These are men anywhere from 16 to 60 years old. And my image for that, I didn't bring it along to Holden, but I have a striped tablecloth in primary colors, and I spread this tablecloth and use images like that, this to teach. And it is like, my image for that is like hungry little children that have never had good food. And they just love, these grown men, prisoners, send letters to their families and friends using stickers and calligraphy markers. And it's one of the most wonderful experiences, because I think it appeals to the child in all of us, no matter where we are. And then I have an opportunity to say, to talk about, okay, I'm not incarcerated, but I'm still on a freedom journey, so that it's not sort of some kind of a patronizing relationship. But I just said that to illustrate it can be used in any kind of setting, and with if you're a grandparent, or if you're a godparent, aunt or uncle. Another way I started doing this when my children were small, Kathy teaches parenting classes, is that I was in a very stressful neighborhood situation where we had moved to this particular town, and the people next door and the people across the street, well, the parents happened to be very abusive to their children. And so their children were teaching, for instance, a nine-year-old was teaching my little four-year-old how to steal at the Kmart. Well, I wasn't real excited about that. And so I had all kinds of obstacles I had to deal with, and we couldn't afford to move. So I had to be very creative. And a lot of, I think, this kind of getting in touch with your own images comes out of situations where you can't buy your way out of it or escape in some way. So I didn't bring that along out here, but I just bought a spiral notebook, and I would do this with scripture, because one of the ways I wanted to pass on what my father had imparted to me in his style was his love of scripture. And he memorized, every time I was a little girl, we'd go to church, I'd memorize a verse, we'd come home, I'd memorize another one, and that wasn't my style, but I would do this with scripture with children, and get out, not postage cards, but just 3x5 recipe cards, and have them draw pictures of what the scripture was, use stickers and markers, and then we would place it on the table like this as our table prayer for the evening. And it's a way of imprinting on little children's brains that God's word is something that's wonderful and exciting and is full of color. So, okay, I'm groping to just try to present why I believe in this kind of method of sharing the good news. And so I use it with people in bereavement, because my image of that was my mother going to the mailbox 3 weeks or however many days, pick your day, after my father's funeral, and the holidays are coming and she's alone. And I am like a little kid, even at Holden, it never goes away. I told all my friends to write to me. I love to get mail. So see, part of what we do, I think, is of what we like to have done to us. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about the role of a giver of a card and the receiver of a card. Now, mind you, I'm talking about this as a metaphor as well, okay? This is a metaphor for any kind of giving we do. So if your thing isn't sending greeting cards, please make the leap to what your thing is. Like, one of my friends has a flower budget, and she brings fresh daisies to people that need it at unexpected times. I'm really talking about a ministry of encouragement, a tool for transformation, that you know people care about you. Okay, so think of yourself as the giver of a card. What is involved in giving a greeting card? First of all, it's highly it's highly creative to even think of doing it, to think that you should send someone a card. In the session yesterday, we talked about all of our good intentions and that never materialize sometimes, or that people will think in bereavement, especially, like, if you don't get the card sent the first week, you think it's too late, and it's never too late, because one of my passions is ongoing card ministry in terms of encouragement. And then you go pick out a message, you go buy a card, anywhere from 50 cents to $3, whatever you can spend on a greeting card. You have to buy a postage stamp to take the time to get it in the mail. It's a tremendous act of giving, I believe, to do all that, to make time to do that in your busyness. And then you think of the person getting the card. Now, either in a bereaved situation or just a friend or someone that's depressed, someone that has, like, we've several sessions that I've given, this whole issue of long-term suffering, when you have a person that you're living with that is mentally ill or has been injured by a drunk driver and is permanently handicapped and your life has radically changed. Those kinds of situations are unending, it seems like, grief. So you walk to your mailbox, and among all the junk mail and everything else that comes is a letter like came. I've gotten three letters from, this came to me at Holden, and when I see a letter like this, I get all excited and I think, I wonder who it's from, and you rip it open, and it's a wonderful gift. And it means this person has picked out a message for you. This is, you know, more of a light side card, but you know what you do with nice cards that you get. You put them up on your dresser or your refrigerator and read them over and over, and it's a tremendous gift of encouragement. So that's just a little blurb on what can be done with image, metaphor, and symbol. And it's interesting for colors, because, like, if some of you have gone to Nancy Searle's session, now I'm thinking of I think of 10 people that are in my groups at home that I've left, I'm coming back to in September. I can tell you which of these stickers I would pick out for their personalities. This is Bernie. Because she dresses in colors like this a lot. She's very soft. She's probably 67 years old, and she's got real pretty graying hair. And this is Bernie. Those are her colors. And when I send cards to children a lot, or someone that's, you know, had a tremendous celebration, you pick a balloon. And so I just, this is what I do, is just do something like this and write a little message. And it's someone that's very special to me. I'll just send them, you are a gift, and drop it in the mail. And it doesn't take long. I think this is incredibly exciting stuff to do. And then I buy colored pens. And so if you're teaching Sunday school, we use this a lot in our home worship. Another little thing on metaphor and image is I buy these wonderful little hearts. We have a Jubilee shop in Minneapolis, top of St. Martin's Table, if some of you know where that is. And these are like 20 cents a piece or something, and I buy them in rows and rows of these whenever I go to Minneapolis and stock up on them. So when, especially again, I'm talking about bereaved situations, when I send a sympathy card or a card at the time of the death or of the anniversary or whenever, I like to do things at unexpected times. And then I'll oftentimes include a heart to say this is just a little symbol of the love you had for Joe or whoever it was, and hang it somewhere in your kitchen. It's a special. And I really believe in this kind of good news and to be as creative as you are. And each of us will do very different things. Another image is a story, the way we can share our images. And I've been doing some taping here at Holden. One of the things I'm finding very exciting to do is to tape people's stories. Julie and Howard Thorsheim are having that as their theme too, that we oftentimes our pain gets trapped inside of us, and by telling our story, we're empowered, the other person is empowered, and I believe that's another way to share the gospel. It's the way we share the good news. And I talked with someone today who said, you know, I just don't know if anybody really cares about me around here. And it's just it's how we can all feel on any given day when someone doesn't talk to you or doesn't ask you about, doesn't seem to care about your story. So to use modern technology in family, one of the things I did with my mother this spring was to have her and my aunt reflect on their whole sort of growing up and their panorama of their life, which is will be a gift to my children.
In front of a video camera.
Yes, yeah. I asked, you know, she thought about it, so she prepared her thoughts and everything. Mm. And we just sat in the dining room, and she just talked about many, many things that I heard things in a new way I'd never heard before. And it's a way of preserving your family images, your family metaphors to pass on to your children. Any questions or comments or input at this point? Yeah.
I belong to a lodge, and I'm Sunshine Chairman, and they call, and then I send out cards, and I always keep a lot on hand, and not only just bereaving cards or things like that. If I know if somebody's kind of down in the dumps, I've got thinking of you cards and mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's really rewarding, the telephone calls you get.
It is. It's fun. Mm-hmm. In fact, I have a file. I brought it along, which is I'm starting now to save cards, especially from people that I'm working with in my groups. And look at this. This is what you get back. You start getting, a lot of times you get back in office. But I have, just to highlight a couple situations, I have one woman I'm working with whose two little children, if you can imagine, ages 3 and 4, two little toddlers drowned in the same day in Lake Superior. And she's a bright young woman. She's a nurse. She's like in her late 20s, early 30s at the most. And she's just thrust into all kinds of feelings she never ever knew she could ever even have. And she's been feeling very suicidal for the last year. And the group is another story. Just very briefly, I have seen a lot of healing just being in a group of 7 other very loving people who care about her. Some light starting to come back into her eyes. But do you know that for every card I send her, she sends me a card back to thank me for sending her a card.
Huh.
And in fact, this might be the letter. I hope, I'm not sure it is. If it isn't, I'll just tell you one of the things she said I'll never forget. She said, I can't believe that you took time to send me that card. In fact, I couldn't even believe that you took time to call me. I mean, any gesture into her world is so wonderful. And she said, do you know why I needed to hear that, whatever I wrote on her card, I don't even remember which one it was. She said, because sometimes I feel like a leper. Mm-hmm. And she'll write back, the depth of grief she is in is so scary, really. So to have, and I send her, I'm nervous sometimes about what to say, too, because as we all know, we are not easily comforted, or we are not comforted at all in certain situations, and we have to walk a long time. She has a funny, you know that little footprints mm-hmm. quote, mm-hmm. I carried you, you know, we've all seen it. She said, one day she came in to talk to me, because I do some private counseling with her too, and she says, Norma, if I get one more of those, I'm going to smash the person. I've gotten 12 of those things. And she said, I am not comforted, I do not feel carried. You know, and it's our well-meaning things we're trying to express. So what I do, I don't send her a lot of scripture right now or anything like that. I send her a lot of this kind of thing with a balloon. No, I have to admit, I haven't sent her balloons. I send her flowers and hearts and rainbows and just say, I just want you to know, thinking about you, holding you in my heart, and praying for God's comfort or something like that. All I am trying to say to her is I'm here. If you
standing want, with you.
Yeah. Because I think we have to be real careful that we don't try to comfort people when it sounds a little cheap, maybe coming from our perspective. So that's one of the ministries of encouragement that I wanted to bring out about how we can use metaphor and symbol. I'd like to read a couple quotes from here. This is a wonderful book a friend passed on to me. It's called The Book of Qualities. And I've been reading out of it several selections this past week. But two I'd like to read today that I think are related to this topic of how we can use image, symbol, and metaphor in transformational healing. And this is called Service. And again, Nancy was talking about orange being the color of servanthood and giving. And that's what I really think this is. Service is devotion's practical sister. She is a funny one, sort of austere and sensuous at the same time. She isn't as stern as she was as a young child, and she is not in such a hurry, but her intensity has not diminished at all. She has learned that seeds must be watered before they sprout. Some lie dormant for years. Shoots must be nurtured before they bloom. We all work in different ways. Sometimes we need to remind service to take a vacation. She sees so much that needs to be done, and she forgets that she also needs to rest. In my opinion, service would be a marvelous job counselor. If you can imagine the employment development department hiring someone like her, she never asks you to do what you cannot do, but only what you most truly can do. And one more I'd like to read is on imagination, which is really the what I'm getting at here. This, as I said, are all metaphors for your imagination. You will do things that only you will do. When imagination walks, she writes letters to the earth. When she runs, her feet trace postcards to the sun. And when she dances, she sends love letters to the stars. Some people accuse imagination of being a liar. They don't understand that she has her own ways of uncovering the truth. She studied journalism in junior high. It gave her an excuse to leave school early and interview interesting people. She was surprisingly good at writing articles. When in doubt, she just made things up. More recently, imagination has been working as a fortune teller in the circus. She has this way of telling your fortune so clearly that you believe her, and then your wishes start to come true. Imagination is now studying photography with an eye to making films. She has no intention of working in one of those factories where they manufacture images that lull us to sleep. Her vision is more complex and very simple. Even with the old stories, she wants us to see what has never been seen before. And another little, these are, I seem to have collected quite a few of these at Holden now. And these will just simply be added to my list. And one woman I met, I really realized I've added lists from people all over the country meeting at Holden, which is one of the gifts of Holden. Another little tiny selection I'd like to read that I just opened it and here it was, and I think it's very appropriate. This is a wonderful anthology called In the Midst of Winter from all cultures and all different time periods. And this is from Frederick Lawrence Knowles, and it says, "From Grief and Joy. Joy is a partnership. Grief weeps alone. Many guests had Cana. Gethsemane had one." Want me to read that again? I'll read it one more time. "Joy is a partnership. Grief weeps alone. Many guests had Cana, but Gethsemane had one." Which I think is an invitation to imagination and creativity. I have these wonderful clay necklaces that a friend of mine made, and I just chose to wear this one today, but I just love, my colors are green and blue, and I should have wore that in celebration. But even our jewelry, even the things we wear, the gifts we can give people can have a symbolic value, and then to tell them that I picked this for you because I think of this when I think of you is a tremendous gift of encouragement. Some more images are of planting seeds, and I was mentioning in the group yesterday that one of the things I do oftentimes is get called into a classroom where a teacher has died, for instance, and talk to the children about death and how not to euphemize it. And one of the things I do is leave a package of seeds with the class and ask the substitute teacher or the new teacher to plant this as a little visible reminder of their teacher's life, that new life comes out of old life. And then I always say, that's something you need to talk to your parents about. But it's a way of planting seeds. And oftentimes in a cart, I will include a package of seeds in terms of remembering people who, on any occasion, birthdays, confirmation, you know. So just to think into situations as much as you can and how creative you can be. And then I love butterflies, and oftentimes when I'm teaching a group, for instance, we'll just set an image like this. And I've talked about this in other sessions this week, but there's a whole body of research that I'm trying to do a lot more reading on it, on how symbol and image is very evocative in education for transformation. And to just present this, if I let this sit there for the whole hour, and if I wasn't at Holden, I'd light all the candles. Well, I'm not going to risk anything. It's amazing what those kind of images evoke. And now after hearing Nancy, I'm believing all the more in color. You know, to pick a theme, in whatever setting, to light a yellow candle for the Christ candle. And people focus on that, and it's throughout the teaching session, throughout your family dinner, whatever. Images are being evoked. Okay. any more at this point you want to say? We just have a few minutes left. Another thing to encourage, now I walked into Betty Olson and I said, now if I was going to be here another week, I would come to your art classes. We're leaving tomorrow. But I said, I do calligraphy and I do some other things, but I said, my art teacher in ninth grade told me that I had no artistic ability. So I don't know if I can do watercolor or all these other wonderful things. Like, you know these experiences where teachers just draw on the lines and you feel like you don't have those kind of gifts. But I'm poking around with this is just a color wash. This is just white paper, and you wet the paper and put ink on it and let it dry. And this is a piece, I don't know if you can read it. It says, "The king's daughter is all lovely within." This is from Psalm 45. And another way to be creative, and this is again a bereavement thing, but I've just, I'm experimenting around. I'm hoping to do this for a lot of Christmas gifts this year. This is going to be given to my uncle, because my favorite aunt, I guess my most impressionable aunt, I was telling Kathy and I were sharing stories about aunts one day at coffee, died in May. And I'm writing an article about it too, because I didn't know till it happened how much she was almost like my mother in that family. And to lose her was to almost like lose a whole generation. It is to lose a whole generation of memories and things. And the pastor that gave the funeral homily luckily knew her very well from years back. She'd been a charter member of that church. And his theme was, "The king's daughter is all lovely within." And then he talked about in a credentialed world, he wanted to talk about Hazel's credentials. And then he went on to talk about Hazel Nelson, CC, consecrated Christian. Mm-hmm. Hazel Nelson, DM, devoted mother. Hazel Nelson, SS Serving Sister, and she is the aunt that served the whole family whenever anybody needed anything. Aunt Hazel was there. So I'm making this for Uncle Larry for Christmas, and I'm going to have it framed in a very nice mat, and that's going to be a memory of him for Aunt Hazel for Christmas. And so this is just, like Matthew Fox said, listening to your own images. Now, this will be much more meaningful, I believe, it certainly will be for me to give, than to go buy something at Dayton's or something, you know? And it comes out of our life story. It's a way of blessing an event, that kind of a thing. So I'm just poking around with that. I'd like to read Henry, let's see, where did I put it now? Henry Nouwen's quote, it is, that sums up a lot of what I've been trying to say today in terms of using image, metaphor, and symbol as tools for transformation and being with people and community. And then I'd like to just quickly talk about some of these cards. When we honestly ask ourselves which persons in our lives mean the most to us, we often find that it is those, instead of giving much advice, solutions, or cures, have chosen rather to share our pain and touch our wounds with a gentle and tender hand. The friend who can be silent with us in a moment of despair or confusion, or who can stay with us in an hour of grief and bereavement, who can tolerate not knowing, not curing, not healing, and face us with the reality of our powerlessness, that is the friend who cares. And that's from Out of Solitude. So that's what gives me joy in terms of saying long-term card ministry, is that you're choosing, you're being very intentional about staying with someone over a long haul. And like yesterday's image was, I really believe what it is an invitation into community. It's an invitation into one-to-one community, and then it's an invitation into larger community because you have a trusting relationship. You have a context. So, any other reactions you want? Yeah, want to say? Where this hits you in your life? Meets you, I mean, not hits you, but meets you.
You know, you give flowers to people in their life. But I just have one friend, I could buy a cuddly little toy or a cuddly little teddy bear or something. And I've just gotten a lot of joy from that. And the cards that I've gotten back, I just know that just that cuddly little animal or whatever it is something that they can hug and kind of hold on to. And it just seems to do something that another flower doesn't do.
She has done that when I've been in the hospital quite a few times, and she always comes with some kind of a little teddy bear it's just something different.
Yeah, and it's your thing.
And it lasts longer than the flowers.
Yes.
You don't have to throw them out.
Yes. You might have a whole little corner in my living room.
There's these odd lot stores, I don't know what they're called on the West Coast, but on the East Coast they're Merit stores or something that has leftover lots of things you can buy. Little bears or things like that, very inexpensively. Or I get little wind jammers, you know, these wind jammers with all the color of the rainbow, and I just try to stock up on those.
Another thing, no matter what your thing is, I think, and this has been another theme of my sessions, has been the whole thing of intentionality. Like, I just had this experience within the last 24 hours. There's a person in the Holden community right now who I've been watching all week with a lot of intrigue. She just really fascinates me. And I haven't had a chance to talk to her. I haven't gone up to her and talked to her. I have never been together with her that close yet in this community. So we happened to sort of run into each other at the end of Vespers last night, and I just said, you know, I just think you are so interesting. Which is something I'll often say to people. I'm very bold. But I said, I like the way you look, and I really listened to what you've said in some sessions. And I said, and she went, well, thank you. And it happens that she was not feeling that way at all. And I really believe that is one, we talked about initiation in other sessions in much more detail, but that's this whole thing of going out of ourselves to initiate to someone else in whatever way we feel comfortable doing that, because oftentimes the person needs it. And if we don't say it, then it never happens. And so as a result, we talked for 2 hours this afternoon and had an amazing amount of interlocking story connections. And I've said this before, I've I always feel like I'm repeating myself, but I don't think many of you haven't been here before, but that's another reason I believe in cards as such gifts, because especially now we're talking about grief again, that's a time when you're at a real low energy time and you may not want to talk, but when you receive something in the mail and then you keep receiving it in the mail, I don't think people do that unless they really care about you or are interested in an ongoing relationship. And so it's an invitation into a
relationship. It's always a joy to receive a communication from somebody I know who knows me pretty well. But it's a special surprise to receive a communication from somebody that I didn't think knew me very well, nor would care that much.
Yes.
That's a really special thing. And at the same time, when I'm thinking, when something happens to someone else, and I'm thinking, if I send that person a card, will she recognize that it's from me? Will she know me well enough? Will she think it's funny that she's receiving a card from me? And I do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I found that they respond the same way that I would respond.
But I think most human beings, unless they're off the deep end in some psychological category, want human community. Mm-hmm. But most of us are afraid of intimacy. Were any of you here when I told the story of Kent and Norma Knudsen? I don't want to repeat it. I don't think you were. Just quickly tell that story, which illustrates your point very well. Some of you who are ALC, former ALC, you may remember President Kent Knudsen of the American Lutheran Church. And I never knew him. I never even heard him speak. But I was adopted into Lutheranism. I didn't grow up Lutheran. But he was esteemed to be this exciting, exciting leader. He and his wife Norma took a trip to the Orient when he was inaugurated as president, or elected president, to study the world missions in the ALC. And he contracted this bizarre disease called Jakob Creutzfeldt, where the disease attacks your nervous system, the very thing he was most gifted at, was his brilliant mind and his speaking ability. Well, he was dying in North Memorial Hospital in Minneapolis the same time my father was dying of cancer at North Memorial Hospital, and I drove past North Memorial every day on my way to work to teach. So I started thinking, I wonder if people are reaching out to his wife, Norma, or to them as a family or to him. So I started sending my little postcards to Norma Knudsen. Never met her, didn't even know who she was. Just kept sending them, would sign my name, kept sending them. Well, she was on the Board of Regents at Augsburg College at the same time that my husband's uncle was. And they met, and she said, is this your wife that's sending me all these wonderful cards? And he said, no, but it's my nephew's wife. So he had a family gathering. He said to me, she really appreciates those cards. Why don't you take her out for lunch or something? I said, who, me? Take Norma? I was intimidated by the fact that they were famous, but I was also thinking, I wonder if because they're famous, I mean, the whole church was praying for healing. So I wrote her a letter, and I said, I'd like to take you out for lunch if you'd like to go call me. I can't believe some of the things I've done. And she did want to go out, so she called me back, and we set up this date, and the date that we were going to go out was the night I was called home because my father died. So then we reset the date, and we took her out to the Nankin Cafe in Minneapolis, if some of you know where that was. I think it's still there, I'm not sure. And through our conversation, it was the first time I'd ever met her. She told me, you know, a lot about the struggle they'd been through, and I was right. They were very, very much alone. They had a few family members that were there. But she said, I think it was because people thought, oh, they'll just be inundated with support. Mm-hmm. And she really, in fact, was very alone in many, many hours where she would go up and sing to Kent and just quote scripture because he could hear, but he couldn't respond. And then she lived right by my school where I taught, so I'd go over and see her. We became very close friends for that period of time. And then I remember when we lived in South Dakota a few years later, she sent a Christmas letter telling that she had cancer. And I remember Peter saying, oh my goodness, this is her notification letter. And she died not too long after that of cancer. But that was a great teaching to me about how we never can presume that anybody's got too much support, no matter who they are. And if
this, should we be intimidated?
Right. And she was so welcoming of it and receptive to it. So, and I really believe this is an act of God's Spirit, that God's Spirit it's energy, it's mystery to me how that works, but I think we find each other along life's path, and I think we're there for each other. And Holden, of all places, teaches me that, because this bus thing, it really gets to me, this having to say goodbye to hordes of people every day. You're just getting to know.